From the land, the Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 15th day of September 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will be here to take up the cash grain market in the United States. And then we'll discuss, too, the weather forecast for the globe. That with Mike Tenor from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Along the way, Daryl Good will join us with his thoughts on marketing soybeans. I'll give you a hint, move them now if you can. And it all comes up right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. December corn at $3.30, a penny and three quarters lower. The March at $3.40 and a quarter, down two and a quarter. And next year's July, two and a half lower at $3.54. November beans up seven and three quarters at $9.50 and a half. January seven and three quarters higher as well, $9.55 and three quarters. And next year's July at $9.70 even, up six and three quarters. Bean oil 42 cents higher, bean meal up $1.50. December soft red winter wheat 3.5 cents lower, and the July of next year down a penny and a half. Live cattle futures are $106.80, up a dollar. September feeder cattle up $1.15 at $133.82 and a half. October there at $131.50, $1.37 and a half higher. And lean hogs in the October, $55.30, up 37.5 cents. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Hey, Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Todd.
Well, I want to know how things look in the soybeans, given that we went back down and we tested a bottom again. I think this is the third time, and it bounced.
Well, for the most part, September is a down month. It's probably the weakest month of the year, and beans are basically unchanged for the month. And today's ability to bounce off of the early September low or late August low, I think is a supportive technical feature. Now, we do need to see some follow-through on that, but I do think today's action in soybeans is generally positive. Now, the key is, and this goes along with corn, we are entering probably the number one and number two weakest weeks of the year. The last 2 weeks of September are a very heavy favorite for markets to sink on into an October low. That's usually carved out during the first 10 days or so of October up through the October crop report. So I think it's going to be real interesting to see whether or not the market does that. Corn's actually higher for the month. We're halfway through. Corn's higher. Wheat's higher. Soybeans are unchanged. So I think next week is probably going to be real important to see what happens to harvest pressure, what farmers do with their inventory. Does it go into the bin? Does it? Do we get into harvest delays or what happens? Because I do know end users do not have the coverage that they would like to have, but they basically, have the cards in their favor because we are harvesting a record crop. Now, it may not be as big as what USDA says it is, but it's still a big crop. And they have been playing the normal seasonal pattern that prices would weaken, as we go on in the harvest, basis would widen, and they would be able to accumulate inventory during the normal seasonal weakness of harvest. But one thing you notice in corn today, we have been in a full carry market, but you notice that today now with September off expired, December was a stronger month, and so it looks like maybe that carrying charge that is in the corn market could be on the verge of being erased, and that would go into a no-carry type market. And then that would tell you that farmer selling is lighter than what end user demand is, and end users are going to have used techniques, whether it's improving the bases, whether it's trying to get the futures to rally, to try to get prices higher, and to get farmers to maybe move some inventory into the pipeline, because they're anxiously waiting to buy it cheaper. So far, they haven't been able to get that job done yet.
Okay, so I've got a couple of quick questions for you. If basis for corn in particular improves, and we'll come back to soybeans in just a bit, but if basis were to improve for corn, we still have an enormous crop, as you suggested, even if USDA were to lower those numbers in October. And I talked to Daryl Good this morning. This is a side note. Out of the last 20 years, the January report, 70% of the time, has been higher than the September report on yield. And he thinks that's probably pretty close for 40 years. However, if basis is to improve, are there things that producers should consider rather than storing, especially commercial storage? Do they delay price? Do they use a basis contract? Do they just store?
Well, those are tricky questions I don't know if I want to say tricky. I know you're not trying to trick me into anything, but basis contracts are probably what farmers are going to want to use, because a basis contract allows them to generate cash flow and still maintain price ownership. Now doing that in a full carry market, you're setting yourself up to get killed, because if the market goes sideways, then you keep losing the carry and you keep rolling your contract to the next option and you keep eating the carry. So all of a sudden you start out with a basis contract, let's say it's 2500 in December, and then you roll it to March, and then it's 3500, and then you roll it to May, and then it's 4500, and then you roll it to July, and then it's 5500. So when you're in a full carry market, those basis contracts can eat you alive. Now, if we would go to a no carry market, if this market flattens out, basis improves, it basically tells you that USDA's crop is not there. And I think there's at least some indication from what I have heard that USDA is high on the yield. Now, how high, I don't know, but it doesn't look like the 2014 yields are being harvested at this point in Illinois and Indiana. And USDA has Illinois and Indiana right up against 14 yields. And the variability in yields doesn't look like that is attainable. So I think there's downward movement in yield. Not sure about beans. The beans should be good, but we've got good demand in beans. South America is going to plant less beans and more corn because of the export tax and whatnot. And domestic corn prices are more attractive to plant. So beans, I think, are finding support from good demand and the prospect of less acres in South America. Corn is struggling basically from the opposite of that scenario. But I think there's enough disappointing yield expectations coming in that's holding up corn. And I think the key here is if we start losing that market, like I said, the end users are short. They got a good export book on. They need good domestic coverage. Most end users don't go out more than 30 to 60 days. They might even be less than that since we got a big crop in front of harvest. And I kind of think we'll have to see what happens next week. Like I said, we're entering the weakest 2 weeks of the year on average. And if the market can't go down during those 2 weeks, then that means you've got people caught short bought. And then you're going to see the basis improve. You're going to see the carry come out of the market. And then that would maybe be a good opportunity for farmers to use a basis contract. And then for maybe to protect that basis contract, they could maybe take a look at purchasing some kind of put option, to kind of protect them from a big price dive maybe through the fall, late fall or winter months until you get into the uncertainty again of raising the new crop, which in this case would be 2017.
Hey, Dan, thanks so much. Always enjoy our conversations. Looking forward to talking with you again next week.
Okay, very well.
In today's agricultural news, we'll start in Washington, D.C. with WRDA, or the Water Resources Development Act. As the Senate prepares to pass its WRDA package, the House is teeing up a much slimmer measure to hit the floor as soon as next week, per House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee Chairman Bill Shuster. His panel held a hearing this morning on the projects that have recently received the endorsement of the top general at the Army Corps of Engineers, including a $2.6 billion navigation project in Shuster's home state of Pennsylvania that was cleared by the Corps on Monday, as well as an adjustment for an Everglade restoration project that's busted its 2004 spending limit by more than 60% and is now slated to ring in at $618 million. The oil industry is getting a big wake-up call in the Dakotas. Stunned by a punch from the Obama administration, the oil industry is coming off the bench to enter the brawl over the Dakota Access Pipeline. The industry did not see the administration's Friday stop work order coming. The pipeline, which would carry about half of the daily production from the Bakken Formation, is 60% complete. The Obama administration changed the rules in the middle of the game by pausing work on the pipeline in North Dakota. Well, one other story from Washington, D.C. The new target date for the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency's assessment on glyphosate, is now sometime in the spring of 2017, which coincides with the arrival of a new presidential administration. The EPA is 2 years late in proposing risk levels that will be the basis for a decision on whether or not lawmakers will keep the herbicide on the market. Some say the blame falls on the International Center for Research on Cancer for the delay in decision-making. A report in March of 2015 from the research center found glyphosate to be a possible carcinogen risk. That report is making it more difficult for policymakers around the world who say that the product is safe for its prescribed uses. The report did not actually look at approved uses of the product or deal with exposure levels. It just found that it's possible for the chemical to cause cancer. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. The big story from the September USDA reports is the size of the soybean crop in the United States. I'll have more in a moment on the implications of the 50-plus bushel to the acre yield. Well, the soybean crop in the U.S. is big, record-breaking, in fact, on two fronts. The 50.6 bushel to the acre national average yield is the largest ever, and it will consequently produce a record-breaking 4,201,000,000 bushels of beans. This staggering number makes USDA's August guess at the size of the crop look meager. It was 1.7 bushels to the acre less, and when the September number was released, the trade collectively gasped and turned in hopes to the consumption part of the USDA supply and demand table. They were most definitely surprised, as University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good.
I think the market was really looking perhaps for an unchanged to smaller yield forecast, so kind of caught leaning the wrong direction. At this juncture, we're looking at a crop over 4 billion bushels, and the good news is the projections of consumption remain pretty high, so USDA is not expecting a huge buildup in inventories of soybeans this year, and still think that we could average around $9 a bushel for the marketing year, pretty close to what we did last year, even with a larger crop.
The market is trying to digest all of this bearish news while at the same moment turning its attention southward. Brazilian and Argentine farmers are just beginning to sow their summer crops, which brings us to marketing the big soybean crop in the United States. Floods in Argentina earlier this year decimated its soybean crop. U.S. farmers benefited as importers turned to them to provide their soybean needs. Well, back in June, it was thought the United States would have 370 million bushels left over from last year's crop when September arrived. The rains, the harvest time floods in South America, changed everything, and importers gobbled up U.S. soybeans, leaving just 195 million bushels available. Well, it tells Daryl Good now is a better time to sell soybeans rather than later?
You know, I think so, particularly on soybeans. If you can get an early harvest, we're seeing some decent basis levels on beans right now. We're coming off of a period when spot soybean prices in central Illinois were running well above November futures, 20, 30 cents above. That's began to erode, but we're still looking at prices pretty close to option value. It says to me that with big yields and that kind of price, well over $9, that revenue looks pretty good by selling some soybeans, at least, if not a majority of soybeans, right out of the field.
The sooner the better and the higher the quick ship premium, although those are likely to disappear quickly. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. Matt Bennett is here. He's with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And this afternoon, he's picking corn. Thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule there, Matt, to deal with us. How the crop's been there in near the Shelbyville, Illinois area?
Yeah, our crops have been pretty good to start with. We've been in a couple of different fields so far, getting ready to nose out into another one. We've picked a little bit of corn that we treated with fungicide earlier in the summer and some that we did not treat, and there has been a little bit of a difference. But we've been overall pretty happy. Not quite 2014 yields, but overall very pleased with our yields so far.
Right now, you can't tell me there was a little bit of a difference. Was it 20 or 30 bushels or less than that?
Oh, it's less than that, yes. Definitely less than that. Pretty good corn, you know. It's one of those things where the same field a couple of years ago, probably off maybe 10 to 15 bushel from where it was then. But I probably have a couple fields that might outdo a couple of years ago. But for the most part, I think our corn crop's good, maybe off a hair. I think the bean crop's significantly better than a couple of years ago, though.
So we are looking at low $3 cash prices for corn. What should producers do about that corn which needs to go into commercial storage?
Well, you know, I'm not much of a fan of paying for commercial storage this year. I've been pretty open about that. I think whatever you don't have sold in advance or can store on the farm, I would be moving the corn and then re-owning that corn with a cheap call option strategy. I want to go ahead and have my floor in place with an opportunity to participate, because if I'm going to pay 20 cents to get out to Jan 1, you know, there's no guarantees the market's going to rally. So I may be paying 20 cents and see the market go down, and I really don't want to see that.
Once you get a little bit further into this market, if things begin to flatten out as they have today, once we rolled off that September contract, and maybe if we don't have a carry in the market, would you change your mind?
Well, with the carry in the market, I think it's telling you, you know, go ahead and store it at home for sure. But it's awfully tough to, you know, to look at this thing and say, hey, I think I need to store this in town. And, you know, if I go out to July, maybe you've got right out of 25-cent carry, but it's going to cost most people 30 cents to store it till July. So, you know, I'm probably more along the lines of I'm going to use that carry and look for basis plays with my on-farm storage. And then with the stuff that I deliver to town, I'd be a whole lot more likely to go ahead and sell it and then, you know, re-own it. That way, if you do get a rally, you're going to be able to participate. If you don't, it's not going to be much skin off your back.
And any thoughts on soybeans? We have maybe 25 seconds.
With soybeans, I think most people that I've talked to are expecting really good yields. Early beans have been awfully good. I think if you can make really good money at these price levels, I'd go ahead and move some on. You can re-own a few if you want, but I think that this is really good profit, and I want to latch on to as much of it as I can.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it, and good luck out in the field this week.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
That is Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. We're joined by Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Thanks for being with us, Mike. Let's start in the Midwest with the immediate forecast. Farmers would like to be rolling in the field. However, looks like there might be some rainfall that'll slow things down for a bit.
There will be a period of showers and thunderstorms across a large part of the central U.S. over the next several days. It's not going to be a total washout for everybody, but we're looking for generalized rainfall of around 1 inch in most locations through Saturday. After we move beyond Saturday, it will be a lot quieter and a lot warmer for that matter. Temperatures will top out in the 70s and 80s several times beginning late in the weekend and more so early next week, and that will be accompanied by drying. The real question is what happens later next week and into next weekend, 7 to 10 days into the future. There will be another system at that time, and that one will need to be monitored. So we should see an uptick in rain chances in about a week to 10 days from now, beyond what we see over the next few days. So not a total washout here over the next 7 to 10 days, but not ideally dry either.
And speaking of dry, there's been some whispers in the trade about Brazil and it being dry. Is that a concern at all?
We're not concerned about that at the moment. And it's primarily because what we're seeing as far as dryness goes in Brazil is very normal of their September climate. One of the key things to always remember about the main soybean areas of Brazil is that they start out extremely dry every growing season. The reason for that is simply because they have a distinct rainy season and a distinct dry season. Their dry season essentially begins in June and lasts into early September. During that period, they might only receive 1 to 2 inches of rain over the entire 3 months. So we're talking about a very small amount of rain that is dissimilar to anything that we have here in the Corn Belt. But the other difference is that they have a lot of rain in December, January, and February. Average rainfall is nearly 10 inches per month at that time of the year. To put that in perspective, in the big floods of 1993, we had about 10 inches per month in Iowa, and that led to one of the biggest flood disasters of the last 100 years. But that would be totally normal of the weather in Brazil, and they have a very sandy soil that's able to absorb all of that rain. So right now, we're just not concerned about it. They turn wetter every single week through the end of the year in these northern areas of Brazil, and we expect significant rainfall to show up at some point in time, but it might not be for 2 to 3 weeks.
On that note about floods, it reminds me that Argentina had a rough end to their growing season last season. What do they look like for the beginning of the season this year?
It's been fairly dry in Argentina in recent weeks and dating all the way back to August 1st. That is a tiny bit unusual, but similar to Brazil and similar to the U.S. spring, it turns a lot wetter each week going forward as they move through their spring, which is beginning now, and moves into the summer. So they could use a round of rain, but the lack of rain this week and into next week is going to aid corn and sunflower planting. And then we do look for a low chance of rain in about 7 to 10 days from now. So concern in Argentina at this point in time is also low. And you could even argue it's been fairly favorable, at least for early corn and sunflower planting.
And one final southern hemisphere area we should check in on, Australia and the wheat crop.
We're concerned about some of the things that have been happening across the eastern half of Australia's wheat belt. This area has been very wet for many months, going all the way back into April and May. And now we're moving into the key heading phases that are occurring right now. And it just has not stopped raining and is not going to stop raining. So we're a little bit concerned about the amount of rain that's forthcoming to the eastern wheat belt. Another 1 to 3 inches is fairly likely over the next 10 days as a number of storm systems move through, and they don't need any of that rain. Whether or not that becomes a quality issue or something to be concerned about later on this month or maybe in October remains to be seen. But we can just see that from a meteorological standpoint, it's been fairly wet there and it's going to stay that way for a while longer.
Thank you so much for taking the time with me today.
You're welcome, Todd. Talk to you soon.
That, of course, is Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago.